You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 1 September. Hello, spring. The U.S. has closed today for Labor Day. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nkunza, Sanlam Private Wealth. Northam Platinum results, MAS, Moss PLC. I mean, there's something there. They had results. The struggle is over. And gold breaking high on Friday. Gary Kaplan from Carp. Tough results, but new production facilities are operating ahead of schedule. And then we're going to be talking with Justin Share on top 40 companies with the best and worst low income levels of pay. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, FSCA to clamp down on failing pension fund trustees. Almost 800 trustees face action over failure to complete mandatory training. And from Bloomberg, U.S. trading partners dazed and confused after tariff court loss, but the tariffs remain in place as the White House appeals. Morning markets, the U.S. was red, S&P down 0.6% and NASDAQ off 1.2% on Friday. The East is mixed. We got Sydney down 0.25%, Tokyo down 0.4%, and then Hong Kong up strongly 1.7% and Tencent 1.2% higher. Commodities mostly green. Gold futures 3,544. Brent is the red at 67.24. Platinum green 1,379. Palladium green 1,146. The rand 17.65. Bitcoin 107,400. And top 40 opening call 170 points to the upside, 0.2% green.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning now with Nkunza, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, we're in the middle of earnings season and we got the Northam Platinum results out. This, of course, for the year ending June. So it is weak platinum prices. But I got to say, lots of minus numbers here. But I thought, I mean, all in all, not too shabby. And as, of course, PGMs have moved higher post-period end, looking much better in the periods ahead.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Morning to the listeners. Thanks for having me on as always. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't too bad. As you said, softer platinum price is obviously knocking it. But if you sort of drill down to the actual facts and figures of the business, I mean, it was the first time in Northern's history that PGM sales volumes exceeded that 1 million mark. So yep, they are pulling a lot of the shiny stuff out the ground. And then also, you know, you think about just by the name Northern Platinum, you think it's just platinum, but, palladium doing quite well, rhodium prices as well, which is a small portion of its basket, up significantly as well. I will say one thing, though, Simon, is I thought the CEO, Mr. Dunn, was unusually cautious compared to the other Platts sort of CEOs as well. I mean, he was we listened to the Implats chap not so long ago. He was coming out and was quite optimistic about the future, where, I don't know, Mr. Paul Dunn seemed quite cautious, but maybe he's just planning things for slowdown. But overall, nice set of numbers. And if you're a shareholder, you're up 100% far this year.
Yeah, yeah. He reminded me of the Richemont Rupert the Bear, which was, I mean, which is his, you know, it's sort of like that's his sort of almost cause rationale. But I did notice that. Mass PLC, I have to be honest, this is not a REIT I'd ever really looked at. Then, of course, the whole takeover story starts to happen. Hyprop was involved for a week or so before they pulled out. Results came out. Looking at the results, and now that we're all also sort of aware of its existence, is there something here with Mass PLC? Is it worth having a look at, or is it, I don't know, best left alone? Certainly, I mean, no distributions, but lots of promises coming with that new almost majority shareholder.
Yeah, as you said, it was a little bit of a tricky one. A lot of us don't look at it too closely, although when all that corporate action story broke, it was like back and forth. My corporate action guys were sending me sort of statements every 2 days. You know, that this is the new pitch. Speak to your clients. This isn't the pitch. So a little bit tricky. But overall, I say, you know, interesting enough, Simon, if you look at the sort of areas that they play in, I mean, they've got those retail assets in sort of Eastern Europe, Romania, Bulgaria. I mean, Poland's an interesting one for me. Fastest growing demographic in sort of Eastern Europe is Poland.
Yeah.
And I think that it's certainly maybe a little bit of luck involved, but they're certainly playing in the right space. I still think it's a bad one. I mean, it's a little bit of a rand hedge. And as I said, if you want to expose it to that fast-growing European, when you look at those numbers, I thought they were pretty decent, actually.
Yeah, no, I agreed on that. And a significant discount to net asset value. And when dividends start to flow, that will be quite nice. We have we had the PCE inflation data on Friday. This is the FOMC's preferred. Just kind of in line in the high 2%, below 3%, but well above the 2% target as well. And then gold. Gold started to run. I suppose two questions. One is, what was that response to the PCE numbers, which were maybe not strong enough for the market? But gold is moving for the first time since Liberation Day.
It is, it is. And if I can throw another one in there, we don't often look at it, but it's on my screen this morning, is silver. I just noticed $40. I'm looking at my screen now, $40.46 as we speak. So I haven't seen that above $40 for a while. So I think it's a combination of a few things. First and foremost, I mean, you'd be pretty sort of blind if you can't see what's happening with Mr. Trump and the Fed. So there's a lot of concern around that. So geopolitics certainly helping gold get a bid. I guess it depends what side of the inflation you fall on. I mean, if you think inflation is sticky and quite frankly, you know, the target is 2% and it's been months and months since it's sitting at the core inflation sitting at 3%. So we've still got a way to go. So that's going to give it a bit. And then the other one, starting to get a little bit of murmurings of stagflation, you know, possibly sticky inflation, a little bit of growth. And if you want an asset class that certainly is reliable and is a safe haven asset that that basically maintains its value when currencies weaken, like we're seeing with the dollar, as purchasing power sort of falls as well. You do get that 70s-style inflation. I'm not saying you are. But if that is a scenario that's in your models, then gold has to be a part of your portfolio. And you can understand why it's running this morning.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that silver chart, I mean, it's actually not back at the 2010 levels. But it is, as you say, I mean, it is running. It's above 40. It hasn't been above 40 since late 2011. Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth. We'll leave that there. Appreciate the early morning. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Gold, are you bullish? As Nick says, certainly there's a lot of argument you could make to say you certainly there is a bullish case. But have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Gary Kaplan, CEO of Carp. We had results for year-end June. It saw revenue up 2%, but HEPS down 47%. Gary, when we chatted at mid-year, would have been back around February, I guess, it had been a tough first half. If anything, from the environment you're operating in, the second half, even tougher still.
Good day, Simon. Yeah, thanks for having me on your show. Yeah, certainly a tough environment out there. We actually were trading fairly well, and then April and May were really tough months for us, covered in June. It has been a tough H2. But I think overall, you know, results down, but a lot of positives in terms of ramping up all of our major projects, the four big projects, funding them off our own balance sheet, remaining within our covenants despite a weak environment in the startups. We refinanced all of our debt. And a good foundation in place for forward-looking. So, yeah, tough year, but I think a lot of good work done.
The PG Bus and your new MDF line, and we've been chatting around this as you've been building it up, it is now operational, if anything, perhaps even ahead of schedule?
Yes, it is. So we got it up to full capacity. All the operational metrics are within our feasibilities. And, yeah, we had given ourselves 4 years to get to full capacity just in terms of selling the product, and we managed to do that in our last quarter. Wow. And then forward looking, we're planning to run that plant full into F26. So exciting for us.
Yeah, and fully up and going. To your point, I mean, I expected this to take, I don't know, a couple of years, but you are there already and it is chugging along 100%.
Yes, absolutely.
And there was a bunch of increased operating costs. As a lot of those costs, things such as the new PG Bison, you've also got Safari Pool did some commissioning during the period. Was that a lot of the sort of increased operating costs?
Yes, it was. So to start up a plant of that scale, you don't flick a button and flick a switch and off you go. It's a start-stop over a number of months. So you can imagine you have 100% of the operating costs, but you operate at a very low level of utilization. and mm-hmm. that slowly increases over time.
Gotcha.
And then as well, you've got to buy market share, so you're not getting the best prices. So that also improves over time. Mm-hmm. So those were the two biggest implications on our results.
And the PG Bison, is this, I mean, you're increasing exports, you're focusing on value add sales, which I imagine has got extra margin as well.
Yes. So domestic sales are at good margin and also to our neighboring territories.
Mm-hmm.
We supplement that with exports to run our capacity full, which is unfortunately at lower margins.
Mm-hmm.
But then we've had a long-standing strategy of value add, where we increased our value add ratio this year. And that obviously gives us better margin. And it's a much more sticky sales relationship.
Mm-hmm. Safripol, we mentioned a new plant commissioned there. But I mean, globally, the polymer industry remains under pressure.
It is, yes. Just globally, it's an industry that's under pressure for various reasons, including just subdued growth, new capacity coming online, energy costs, etc. So that's going to remain an industry under a bit of pressure for some time still.
Your Unitrans underwent a restructuring, but again, just a very tough operating environment is my sense.
Yeah, you know, Unitrans, we've done a lot of good work. And I guess that's one of the bigger disappointments in our results is that all the good work hasn't translated through to the profit yet.
Mm-hmm.
We still believe it will come. So we remain firm on our targets in that business. It's just taking a little bit longer than we would like. And obviously, the environment's not helping us. So tough environment, very competitive, lower volumes, lower levels of activity. Quite a tough environment to conclude a successful turnaround.
Yeah, I take your point on that. Feltex, some downstream issues, OEMs, I mean, some of them changing their plants, some having challenges. Aside from that, how's that sector doing?
No, it's going well. So H1 was very tough because of a key model changeover
mm-hmm.
and lower OEM volumes. H2 was actually good. So they had a good H2 and leading into F26, they're kind of back to normal.
Are you potentially exposed due to tariffs of vehicles going into the US? My understanding in trying to run the numbers is of total production vehicles in South Africa, US exports are not that significant of total sales.
Yes, it's negligible. And the direct impact on us is really negligible. But I think kind of overall globally, the flow of vehicles, where they're manufactured and where they're sold, I think still needs to settle in terms of how the tariffs are structured.
Yeah, a lot still to settle there in the months, I don't know, years ahead. A last question, net debt. You're expecting this to start coming down. New projects are online, generating cash flow. No concerns around the balance sheet. I mean, it looks from a my perspective, it looks perfectly fine and you're quite happy.
Yeah, as I said, we did all of these major projects off our own balance sheet. We've remained within our covenants. We generated close to 500 million of free cash. And that is a key focus for the new CEO coming in,
mm-hmm.
is to continue bringing down the debt and continuing generating free cash from these major projects now, and obviously a turnaround of Unitrans.
Gary Kaplan, CEO Cap, really appreciate the time. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Cornelia Ngogola, inequality analyst at Just Share. Cornelia, appreciate the time today. Research from yourselves. 15 of 39 top 40 companies have disclosed internal minimum wages. 15 of 39 doesn't seem like a big number. I imagine this number will increase over time as the rules are shifting.
Hi, Simon. Thank you very much for having us. You are absolutely correct. It will actually increase when the Companies Amendment Act comes into operation. As you would know, that it was signed into law
mm-hmm.
late last year, and around December, mm-hmm. some sections of that act came into effect, with the exception, of course, of these sections that require the mandatory disclosure of the lowest pay gaps.
So it's coming. We'll get a whole lot more going. I want to touch on those at the bottom. Before we do, I suppose we should give some level of shout out to some of those at the top. And I mean, Remgro makes sense. Investec makes sense. Impala Platinum, if we think back to that massive platinum strike of a decade or so ago, I mean, kudos to them. Some of the companies are sort of coming to the party with minimum wages. Not all. We'll touch on that in a sec, but some certainly are.
No, definitely, which is actually encouraging. We're also making the point that we do even commend companies like Shoprite, who are voluntarily making these disclosures of their internal minimum wage. Yeah, of course, we have seen companies gradually making these disclosures. Of course, as I've just mentioned, that there is only voluntary at this point. They are not compelled to do so pending that law coming into place. But I should mention, Simon, that even whilst we are excited of this level of disclosure and transparency, what we're actually saying is that then what's the point? And the point shouldn't be just to disclose, but for them to also disclose what is it that they are actually doing in terms of driving fairness within their internal wage practices.
That's a great point. You know, and the likes of the Remgos and the like, those top three, they're all paying in excess of 250,000 a year. At the bottom end, it's ShopRite, just under 72,000 a year. That is just under 6,000, which is, it's above minimum wage. It is well below what the Living Wage SA Network says should be a minimum wage, which they put at 12 to 15,000, and that data from 2022. But your point is absolute. It's one thing to disclose. In essence, what you're saying is, what's the plan here? Because, you know, a 6,000 minimum wage is not cracking it. What is the plan from ShopRite to ultimately get that to closer to a 12 to 15,000 number?
Yeah, that is actually great, because you will see that our contention is that if you're actually looking at the executive pay, it has been growing disproportionately relative to the wages of the lowest paid workers. But also, it is great that you mentioned that 12 to 15,000 proposed living wage by the Living Wage South Africa Network. And remember, the point that we're also highlighting is that that range of 12 to 15,000 is unadjusted for inflation. Yeah. If you are looking at the fact that it was proposed around 2022. So to us, it just this whole pay structures, say, for instance, as we are actually highlighting ShopRite there, highlights that this reality that low-income workers in this country, even when they are actually paid above the statutory minimum wage, they remain entrapped in poverty. Yeah. When we're actually seeing the difference based on what is actually being paid and what has been proposed within the context of a living wage, Simon.
Yeah, and that's the point. It's around a dignified wage. And I've chatted with your colleague recently around Tracy Davies around this. This is really, we want insight, because this is conversations that should be happening at Remco, the Remuneration Committee, not just talking about what the CEO gets, but hang on a sec, we've got a minimum wage here of under 6,000 a month. It's not a living wage. It's not a dignified wage. What is happening? And that's where this conversation needs to happen, and a plan in place. You make the point that SPAR's got a plan to up their minimum wage from, I think it's 12,500 to 15,000. It's going to happen over a few years. There is at least a plan there.
Oh, definitely there is a plan. But even so, we have to ask important question, who is included in that living wage plan and who is actually excluded? And in our understanding, so far as we commend them for putting this place, this plan which focuses on a living wage, that is all and great. But when you ask, what about the front, the store workers, customer-facing store workers, it doesn't apply to them. These are the people who need that most. We did have engagements with them. There seems not to be a plan there, because they're actually saying, based on their operation model, is that the stores belong to independent store owners. So that living wage, that particular company would only be applicable for the distribution centers and head office workers. So the store facing, I mean, the customer facing store workers will not be getting it. So we are still having those conversations, but we hope that something will happen there.
I take your point. There's T's and C's in the SPAR number. I hadn't thought of that.
Definitely.
Of course. And those T's and C's are, well, not insignificant. Those are head office wages. That's not the cashier. That's not the person putting the beans on the shelf in the store. We'll leave it there. It's Cornelia Ngogela. He's an inequality analyst. Just share. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Audrey McGwenshu on the Implats results as they were trading higher. Now, of course, we've got Northam. We asked you if you're holding PGM stocks for further upside. A little over half of you said, yep, looking great. About a quarter of you said, already taken some money. And the rest were saying, nope, not for you. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. RCL Food results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.